Good evening. I want to call this meeting to order. And at the beginning of the meeting, I'd like to say I want to make a few comments about how I want to proceed with this committee as we go through the listening tour. Actually, I'm calling it, but what I'm really calling it, I've decided to name our budget process. It's going to be called the Legislators Got to Work Harder to Lower the Taxes 2014 Tour. And I hope that you can remember that. I'll say that as we go through these meetings. And it's the legislators have to remember to lower the taxes tour and work harder to lower the taxes tour.
What's the acronym for that?
Yeah.
Will you be coaching us on that, Mr. Chair?
I will.
Thank you.
I will. I will do my best. And I do have some ideas about lowering the taxes. Let me just say, as we use the microphones, the departments, 6 to 8 inches away from the microphone works much better. If you swallow the mic, it sounds like you swallowed the mic. And we don't really want to hear that, nor does anyone else. And what a process that I began a year ago, I would like the departments to make their presentation, and then we will ask questions at the end of the presentation. For example, animal control has got a 15-minute window to do their presentation, and we will try to hold to that and ask whatever questions we need to ask. So if the people in the room, legislators in the room, would keep that in mind, I think it'll work. It will kind of work for a positive result here. And we will do questions at the end. Kevin, McGuire, McCarthy, whatever name he's going by, is handing out things. No, I know. And he's handing out additional papers that there were corrections that had to be made. So I think what I'm going to do is start right out with animal control, and we're going to work at the end of the boat down there. So Mr. Jim Bedrew from ASPC.
It's a fine boat.
It is, isn't it? Welcome to the 2014 tour.
Kevin, do I have to advance my own slides?
Enter.
Hi, everyone. Jim Boudreau, Executive Director of the SPCA. We're not requesting any additions to this year's budget for spay and neuter support for the animal control. I think the programs pretty much remain the same. It's really just a way of spaying and neutering, particularly the cat population, reducing the rabies risk by providing those vaccinations to the animals that we produce. We've actually been making wonderful strides with this program. I did provide some statistics for the past few years. You can see how we've increased over time the number of animals that we have done. Last year, 2012, was a record breaker for us in terms of the number of cats we were able to service, over 1,340. I did put together some numbers today with what we've done so far and some projections by year end, and we think we'll hit probably over the 1,550 mark this year. And that's, again, the program is, you know, really twofold, again, controlling the pet population as well as that providing the vaccines.
You will note on page 5/1 that there is no increase from 2011, 2012, 2013, the same amount of money each year, 2014, same dollar amount. Any questions for Jim? Pat Pryor.
Jim, do you have an estimate of the number of feral cats in the county that is the target population for the spay and neuter program?
The overall number of cats is hard to estimate. We I could probably get you some better statistics. We have, though, over time, which I did not provide in this, we have since 2009 seen a decline in the overall population. So there's statistical data to prove that we are making an impact on that population.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Mike.
I might be asking this of various departments as we go along. What would happen if this amount were cut?
What this money helps us do, like Pat pointed out, is truly the feral cat population. So unfortunately, many residents who, out of the kindness of their own hearts, find these animals, realize that they're reproducing and bring them to us, that would be the portion of the program that we really just wouldn't be able to fund. So they'd have to find other alternatives, like perhaps going to a private veterinarian and paying for that service there, which they'd probably be unlikely to do. So unfortunately, you'd not only see a higher incidence of free-roaming cats, but we as a shelter would see far more animals coming in year to year as a result of not being able to do the work.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Any other questions? Frank?
Jim, the contracts with the various towns, can you say something? There was, over several years, there's always been a question about negotiating those or renegotiating.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say something about how that's going and how many towns are now part of the process?
For the past several years now, there's been seven municipalities, with the exclusion of Lansing, Dryden, and Groton, that are part of the Tompkins County Animal Control umbrella for dog control services. I think it's a great group. We actually met this morning. Things are going very well. The municipalities are in the process of devising a new enumeration process. I think there's some feeling that it's kind of twofold. One, the enumeration process is a revenue generator for the municipalities because they can then capture more license fees. We did that process 3 years ago. Each municipality contracted with their own contractor to do a door-to-door enumeration and some by mail. That process worked really well for some municipalities. Some found, it didn't work so well. The city's definitely a struggle due to the high density of housing, especially the transient nature of their population. So whereas most municipalities have seen sort of steady income from the findings of the enumeration, the city has actually started to see a decrease in revenue coming in, which is not unexpected. But the idea now is to develop a model where enumerations would be done on a consistent and rotating basis, and on a three-year basis, everybody would be kind of enumerated at that point, because the fees that are shared by the municipalities are divided up based on their people population, dog population, and the amount of services that they use for animal control. So those fees will vary, but very much like this scenario, the SPCA has kept the we haven't given the municipalities any increase in fees for the last 2 years, nor do we expect one in 2014 for the services that they're getting.
Carol, last question.
This question is actually for Joe or Kevin, maybe.
Could it be done after?
No. I'm going to ask just that as we go through, and it's in the spirit of your theme here, as we go through each of these, last year you told us which programs were, we had four categories, mandated, and we have to do it, and we have to do it their way, mandated, if we do it, it's mandated that we do it a certain way, discretionary, but if we do it, we have to do it a certain way, and then totally voluntary. So for each of these as we go through, can you just let us know which one, where does this one fit in that?
I'll try. And let me just go through the vocabulary again. The mandates are those things that we have no control over. They're entitlement programs, whatever it costs, we have no control. There are mandated responsibilities, things that we must do, but we have some latitude in terms of how we do it. There are fixed costs, things like debt service. We really have little, if any, control over those once we've incurred the cost. The last category is discretionary, where we do have control over really everything. We choose to do things like plowing the roads and providing sheriff's protection and so forth. I think this is a discretionary. I can look. We've got it coded somewhere. I think this is a discretionary program. And if Kevin can hear me, We'll check over the next few minutes, but I believe it's in the discretionary basket.
What I would like, Joe, as long as we're having that conversation, a one-pager with the four things on it that everyone could refer to at their desk. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks. Capital Program Contingency Fund. Let me just make, while Kevin's suiting up back there, there is food at the desk in the back of the room, and you may leave the room anytime you want to. I am not going to stop. We're just going to kind of keep rolling along. Yeah, Frank.
Is Kevin going to – we've been getting new pages here. Are you going to be updating us?
I'll explain those right now. Yeah. So there should be a total of five gray sheets. Those are the color I'm going to use for replacement pages, and hopefully those are the only ones we'll see. But I earlier said that I would have no replacement pages this year, but that didn't happen. The first one is a property tax summary. There was just a $2,500 movement that had happened everywhere else in the budget but except in that page in the book. So I found that then on Tuesday night when we delivered the document. So that was my mistake, and I apologize. The other pages refer to an accounting error in when the fringe rates dropped. Money had to be moved around to make sure some accounts went zero. There were some negatives, so they just got moved around. The total department did not have any change. It was just a little bit of money from one account had to be moved to another one to zero those accounts out. It was totaled like $3,800, so it wasn't a substantial amount of money, and it doesn't affect the tax levy. It doesn't affect any of the bottom line numbers. Those are the replacement pages. I've also handed out PowerPoints for tonight's presentations. They also will be online by the end of the evening. You can download them and look at them full screen if you'd like. I also handed out some information that was requested last Tuesday from Carol Chalk regarding the Human Services Coalition, the agencies in the last 5 years of data, both for the HSC and for the community agencies. And I want to thank Nancy Burston for pulling that together so quickly. The final document I handed out is a legal-sized piece of paper with graphs on it. So the first page of that is all of the county departments and the local amounts for those departments for the last 5 years. So you can see DSS is a clear outlier. So on the second page of that, I took out DSS so you can get a better idea of the rest of the county, because weights and measures kind of disappears on that first graph. But at least on the second one, you can see where it is. The final page of that is all of our agencies with the same scale as the second page.
Let me just say that Kevin and/or Joe will be talking about Section 4, 29 through 37, Capital Program Contingency Fund. I saw a hand over here. Will.
I'm sorry if you already have this, but I know the schedule for these presentations is online. Do we have a hard copy of that in our packet somewhere?
It's in the front of your binder, the front page of your binder.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Thank you.
Frank?
Quick follow-up. Kevin, using the gray pages you just gave us, as you update these, have the departments been notified that there's some updating going on?
Yes, I work closely with the department to make sure that was the correct way to approach it.
Okay, so
they know, and they will get a new – I literally just printed these, so they will get a copy of them as well.
I mean, if the Office for the Aging is doing a presentation tonight, will any of these numbers affect their presentation tonight?
No. No, it doesn't. It has no effect on the bottom line. It was just had to move from one program to another in order to balance out.
Okay.
So capital program. Capital program consists of a couple locations in the budget book. It's Section 3 is kind of the 20-year capital plan condensed to what's going on this year and next year. Let me grab a copy of the binder so I have one in front of me. I do suggest that at least for the start of this, we have Section 3 open, the page 1 of that, available to you. But I'll talk about what, you know, consistency in terms of what the recommended budget information looks like in expenditures and the change. So last year we spent $4.9 million or budgeted for $4.9 million for our capital programs. And capital, again, is the expense within the general fund. We are looking at increasing it based on the 20-year capital plan that we went through back in July of 0.75% over the 2012 property tax levy. So that equates to $316,656. Now, this money, so 2 years at the 0.75. So this year we'll increase it by $316,000. Next year we'll increase it by $316,000. And then beyond that, we'll just increase it by 0.5%. With that plan, we were able to, and a hard look at all of the programs and things that projects that need to go on in the county, we took a hard look at trying to align those so that we could afford to do this. And at 0.5%, it wasn't necessarily feasible. So most of the new expenses that are happening in 2014 have already been incurred through our bonding process in July. And I listed a few of the projects that are the projects that are related to that. Henshaw Road reconstruction, the public safety energy improvements. This isn't the changing of the jail, it's just the energy improvements related to it. And we'll likely see an offset of that in terms of energy savings. The where we're sitting right now, that was covered in our 2013 bond, as well as the conversion of the rest of the county to the telephone voice over internet protocol system. And I was thinking maybe we should look into the future as while those projects that I listed are part of the cost for next year, and we're going to take care of most of that cost or almost all of that cost with the increase of the 0.75%, the rest of it's being covered by 1992 bond that's coming off the books. And you can see that 1992 public improvements on Section 3, page 1, is no longer has any dollar amounts there. That was 2013 was last year where that existed. So there's a little bit of savings there that we're able to use to take care of all those other payments. But as we start talking about what's going to happen in 2014, that'll be expensed in 2015, I listed the highway projects that are up for consideration, and we'll have to debate and discuss in the next couple of months and into 2014. And I also provided the other projects that are on the list that are outside of the highway department. Keep talking about facilities restoration project. And I know that now that Arel's at the right staff level, we can hopefully move forward with this and get some of our other buildings fixed and some of our other replacements that need to happen. The Human Services Building expansion and renovation. Again, these are not, you know, set in stone. These are just things that are part of the conversation for the future, and they have no cost associated with them currently in 2014. Maybe some engineering costs, but I don't incorporate those here. The clinical and billing software replacement, that's paid for. That's a highway, a health department, and that's paid for with their rollover, so there's no local effect on that. But because it's over $100,000, I do identify it. And then the last piece is the jail capacity expansion. So those are the things I've identified. There's no OTRs because we kind of had the conversation. We've already passed the bond. It's part of our base budget. And this falls into that category of other fixed costs. The other half of this I wanted to bring up was contingent fund. Because contingent fund, I guess, falls under county administration, we took it upon ourselves to put it in as an OTR. So this is last year, 2013, $772,000. We're looking to push it up by $115,000. The reasons why, we've really focused on making this budget a more precise document and planning document, as well as, you know, looking at our prior expenditures and really trying to sharpen the pencil. But that also, you know, makes some people sweat about, all right, do we have enough money to make sure we get through future years or future problem swings. And that's why we're asking for this $115,000. And we've consistently spent that $772,000, a little more, a little less every year. But that's been something that's kind of, you know, one of those things we're keeping our eye on. And we're asking to increase it by $115,000.
Brian?
Yeah, just on that point. I understand all that, what you just said. however, it's in an OTR, so what are we to expect in 2015? That's going to become the new target?
Yeah, that's right. It is a target request, so it would stay at the elevated $887,000.
Okay. So how does that then keep with our not using OTRs for recurring expenses, because that you're adding that in there? It's not a one-time
thing. No, OTRs are okay for recurring expenses if you fund those OTRs with recurring revenues. It's the one-time items that we have to be careful about. So, in this case, we're saying this looks to be a recurring future cost, and we are putting property tax dollars behind it.
Okay. I understand we want to get that number up further. So.
Yeah, and Brian, I guess it's we want to be really clear here. There have been times in the past when we have used one-time money to fund what we probably knew were recurring expenses. And at one time, that was up into the $3.5 million range some years ago. Mm-hmm. We backed away from that now. So the rule that we've tried to apply, and we're not perfect yet, is a one-time revenue should only be used for a one-time expense. And again, this we're describing as a recurring expense, so we want to put target dollars or property tax dollars behind it.
So I get my question is you're raising it by 115. 887 becomes the new number, or is that going to be 115 above that for next year?
No, the 887 becomes the new number.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Pepper.
Could you just back up two slides, please? Thank you. Do we have that page in here someplace?
We were just handed it.
Yes, it's also you. Yeah, I handed out the PowerPoint presentations, but I also you can see contingent. Thank you.
It's on the back side of the sheet called Capital Program Path.
Oh, I just found it. Thank you.
Well, this is section 4, page 37. It's contingent fund.
Any other questions about the contingent fund? Capital fund, capital program questions. Go ahead. Yes?
So, as I recall, when we passed the capital program sort of into the future on the Capital Plan Review Committee, we decided to include some things in the capital plan that aren't necessarily traditionally capital, and they included things like the road maintenance program, the aquifer study, some software replacement, some of those items. And we did that because they've been such a struggle, and because we've had to spend money on, we had a big capital program, and we were behind on some of these other things. So to normalize, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, to normalize that over time. But it's not clear to me, looking at the page, the summary page, section 3, page 1, I don't see those that we're actually spending those in this year, 2014, on this. So
they're not there.
My memory.
Okay, so the projects I talked about that are going to be costs for 2014,
yes,
they're actually part of the 2013 public safety improvements and other that are up near the top under bonds. It's the first year, 2014, will cost us $426,450.
Okay. And then it's in not till later years that those get more expensive, and hence the 0.75% per year that we decided we need to keep adding.
Joe? Well,
Yeah, we're actually now beginning that cycle. So this budget increases the levy by 0.75 point to pay for the capital projects that are here. In today's vocabulary, I look at what we're doing here as kind of a debt ceiling issue. So you're not authorizing any new projects by what you're doing here. What you're doing is paying generally for the projects that you've authorized for bonding in 2013. So the bill will first come due in 2014. And as we built that 20-year capital plan, we anticipated that happening and knew that we would need 0.75% in 2014 to be able to pay for it. What you're talking about will now be happening. You will now begin to authorize other projects that are often more generic than you have in the past. I think the example that you talked about was the highway maintenance program. So as we put the plan together, instead of saying highway A, B, or C, we basically have an allocation of funds for highway improvements. So as time goes on, you will begin seeing specific authorizations for that money, but it won't hit until, at best, the 2015 budget. So, again, everything that's in here, with the exception, I think, of the aquifer study and maybe the money for federal matches, essentially everything else has already been bonded. Is that correct, Kevin?
Yeah.
And we're just budgeting for the debt service on things that you've already approved.
Like I said, so we don't get to start our catch-up road maintenance program yet.
Well, we're doing a lot of road maintenance. You can see some very large road maintenance things. But that generic allocation for highway maintenance, and in a very similar way, for facilities improvements, for capital maintenance on our facilities, will come later.
Right. So we need this 0.75% to pay for the projects that you've already authorized. Going forward, that other 0.75% will help pay for some of these projects in highway, including that road maintenance program, in future years. That's not a concern in this budget. This budget is to pay for things that we've already gone out and bonded.
Yeah, no, I guess I get that. I just wanted people to be very clear that we're, by making that target, the increased target, we're kind of building it in for the future, rather than making it a one-time expense. So it does kind of lock us in and preclude spending that 0.75% in future years on program, conceptualizing what happened program.
Excuse me, Carol. Do you have a question for Kevin? I really want these to remain questions, okay?
Yes. But my question was answered.
Thank you. Duly, and then Frank.
Kevin, I'm not sure whether you were at earlier discussions of the capital program when it was being developed and when these catch-up programs for highway were discussed in more depth. I don't remember if you were there, so I don't know if you remember that I believe that we should be doing more than 0.75% addition. We should be doing higher right now and maybe 1% instead of, or 0.78%. So there was a discussion of trying to do more sooner. Otherwise, we're going to continue to be behind. Do you remember any of that?
I do recall that, Dooley. But I feel with the interest rates the way they are and the agreements many of the departments and the programs have come to an agreement that this works and we will make it work.
Anyone else had their hand up on capital? Frank, go ahead.
Kevin, I've been flipping pages back and forth here trying to insert the ones you gave us.
Yeah.
Save me a little time. Where is the sheet that lists all the I'm looking at this list of capital programs. Where's the sheet that tells us what the estimate for dollars?
The costs of those, the full costs? I don't have that page, and I'm actually going to add it to the backside of this one after tonight.
Could you do me one other favor?
Sure.
When you do that, could you identify which municipality these projects are in? Because sometimes if the public is watching, they may not have a clue as to where those
sure.
are.
Sure. Yep. They are listed on the first page. They're broken out in terms of total cost per year. But I will make a second page that shows the total local cost and where they're from.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for capital program? Thank you very much, Kevin.
Thank you.
I have emergency response at 6:15, and I don't see them. Yeah, I mean, should we go COFA? COFA, are you ready? Okay, let's do it. Unless you want to do the county historian also. No, no. COFA is on section 4, page 75.
Ready. Thank you for taking me early. Let's see here. So the Office for the Aging, as you can see in the slide, our overall budget remained relatively stable between 2013 and 2014. Our expenditures decreased slightly overall between the 2 years, and our revenues increased slightly. And this is due to small fluctuations in revenues from program to program. I did want to make this legislature aware that the Office for the Aging was forced to enact mid-year cuts in 2013 due to the federal sequestration. And I notified the Health and Human Service Committee, who I'm sure notified the full body. These cuts applied to the following Older Americans Act programs, and they affected each program a little bit differently. You can see that the nutrition program was disproportionately affected by these cuts. The Title III C2 home-delivered meals program and the nutrition services incentive program were cut approximately $9,000. We estimate this amounts to the cost of about 1,000 home-delivered meals in a given year, which is significant. The cuts in the Title IIIe program, caregiver services would pay for about 94 hours of respite services for family caregivers in a year. And these programs will continue to be funded at these reduced levels until 2021, unless Congress votes to turn off the sequestration. Also, just as a reminder, last year the county administrator recommended and this legislature approved a $21,000 target increase to the senior nutrition program Food Net Meals on Wheels because of the high priority of the nutrition services and because of the fiscal situation of Food Net, the not-for-profit. So these sequestration cuts haven't helped matters, but Food Net's board is committed to continue to raise the funds necessary to keep their budget in balance. And so I'm not here before you to request further funds because of the sequestration, but I did want to thank you for your ongoing support of Food Net, and I wanted you to be aware of the bigger picture in terms of which programs this sequestration is affecting in an ongoing way. And, you know, we're continuing to target our advocacy efforts at the federal level about this sequestration. Full-time equivalents. In 2014, there will be a slight reduction in hours for one full-time outreach worker. This is a voluntary reduction from 35 to 30 hours per week, and it is appropriate for the workload of the program as the demands on our PERS program, the Personal Emergency Response Program, have decreased slightly because our countywide overhaul of PERS equipment has been completed. There was also a slight reduction in time for our seasonal part-time outreach worker on the HEAP program because that program year is expected to end earlier in 2014. So both of these reductions are warranted by the respective programs.
And finally, this is my last slide. We requested, and the county administrator recommended for 2014, a one-time over-target request of $4,400 for replacement equipment for the Personal Emergency Response System program, the PERS program. And it's the explanation is written up in the materials there. What's happening is that the batteries within the small pendants that individuals wear around their neck or wrist have come to the end of their useful life, and we're needing to replace them in a widespread fashion. And this has not been something that we'd planned for. It states in the literature that these pendants have a 3 to 10 year shelf life, and we really didn't know how long we had with these pendants. We just know that starting this year in a widespread way, many clients had called us stating that their batteries had died and we needed to replace them. We did not have the funds within the PERS budget in the program expense line for this widespread replacement. So we're projecting, based on what we've had to replace so far in 2013, what we expect we will need to replace in 2014. We don't want to ask for more than that because we don't want to have a bunch of batteries sitting on shelves in our office, and we hope to budget enough in 2015 for our routine program expense line to cover this cost. So I think that's all I have for this year. If people have questions, I'd be happy.
Dooley, I saw your hand.
This is about FoodNet.
And then Pat.
They try to fundraise, I know. Will you have better information before we adopt the budget on the success of that fundraising for 2014?
For 2013? Yes. Well, Steve Griffin, the executive director, has given periodic updates to the Health and Human Service Committee about their multi-pronged approach to increasing revenues and decreasing expenditures, and I'd be happy to share that information that I have to date on that. So far this year, they are on target with what they hope to achieve for 2013 in terms of fundraising. They've had one staff person whose position they haven't filled. That was due to attrition, so that's helped contain their costs for this year.
Do they expect to have smaller staff next year?
They are aggressively exploring and considering the use of volunteers for certain positions, and so they're looking at that and the sustainability for that in the coming years. So the answer to that, I think they're considering that, yes.
Pat.
Yes, thank you. I have a couple questions, maybe three. Lisa, as I look at this list of under major influences of the federal sequestration cuts,
yes,
and I heard you describe them as you went through them, it hurts just to hear you talk about them.
Yes.
How do you go about making decisions when you're talking about 1,000 fewer meals delivered to homebound seniors or whatever? How do you make those decisions?
Well, they're not easy decisions to make, and the sequestration cuts these specific amounts were targeted to these specific programs. So it wasn't my choice. It would never be my choice to cut from these.
I understand
areas.
That, but I'm just.
So
what criteria can you? How do you know who gets the cut?
Well, those two specific lines, the Title III C2 and Nutrition Service Incentive Program, those funds only go directly to FoodNet. So I leave it to the expertise of Steve Griffin to work with his board to manage his budget and decide how they're going to manage the cuts.
And then on the reduction in time, you mentioned that the HEAP program will end sooner this year. So does that mean then that those who receive HEAP funding will get less to help them.
The time frame in which the program expects to operate will be abbreviated this year. That's what they are expecting. The federal funds are less than last year, and so if people want to apply for HEAP, the open HEAP season will begin in November, and they expect it will go through March. The benefit levels, I think, are comparable to what they were last year. However, this year they're not doing any furnace repair or replacement with the HEAP funds. That's a difference, and that is also going to hurt people. We're concerned about that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Leslin, Frank, and Will.
Thank you. One of my questions is, what do we have? But I have a number of other just clarification questions. Lisa, when you talked about it was a voluntary reduction of hours. Can you tell me a little bit more what that means? The person just said, I want to work less hours, or was that part of a larger conversation?
It was part of a larger conversation and how to. We went through several iterations of the 2014 budget to reduce expenses, some of our subcontractors, including FoodNet, took hits in this budget due to some of the federal and state programs. When it came down to finally needing to make some cuts in the personnel line, my first question posed to staff was whether there were any voluntary requests for reductions in hours, and that I would consider them, but that it wasn't a carte blanche for people. And one person did come forward, and it did fit programmatically with, what was happening with that program at the time, so I thought that it was warranted.
Thank you. Could you also, do you still have a contract with the Southside for the senior shopper program?
We do not.
You do not.
That was maybe 3 years ago.
Lisa, you need to talk.
Oh, sorry. I can choose one microphone. About 3 years ago, we lost the funding for that.
And I apologize, but I just need some clarification. I'm trying to follow here, like Title 3B, and it was up there. If you can put that slide up, like what supportive services and what, can you tell me just a little bit of what's included in supportive services?
Sure. So that's one of the titles under the Older Americans Act, and it's rather broad. So we often use that to cover the salaries of many of our office staff, aging services specialists. So that's where that cut went to.
Thank you. And what is Title 7? I think it's Title 7. I was going through the budget book.
Title 7 is the Ombudsman Program, Federal Ombudsman Program.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Frank.
Thanks, Jim. Lisa, a couple of questions, clarification. At the last legislative meeting, I reported that change regarding the sequester money and how it affected the food net. Is that one of those adjustments up there, or is that yet to? Okay, because I know that would lead into what Pat was asking. The second is, last year there was a hit, if you remember, to the HEAP program, and they took it away, gave it back in another way, and the total value was never, to the best of my recollection, never really restored. Has it been restored now?
No, not to my knowledge. What happened was, on the federal level, there was a deep cut to the HEAP program. That money came through to the state, and on the state level, a very small percentage of the HEAP funds were used to fund our weatherization program for older adults. And so in order to shore up the money to be spent solely on the HEAP program, they cut the WRAP program funding entirely from our budget.
That never came back?
No. No.
The decision, there's been a lot of talk about pulling the SNAP program out of the farm bill, and the House voted sadly to pull it out. Have you had a chance to talk with Patricia about what the effect of that might be on our food stamp program?
I've heard her discussing it, but I've not. That it doesn't directly impact our nutrition budget, even though we have a funding line which is called SNAP. They've renamed it Wellness and Nutrition. It was the Senior Nutrition Assistance Program.
And last one. I had occasion to talk with Dr. Kilgore last week about Cougar Ridge. And a couple of years ago, we got into this Burger Commission arrangement looking for more beds. Are we going to be able to anticipate any positive results coming forward with the new management up at Cougar Ridge regarding the Burger Commission's recommendation that we get more beds? And if so, is there going to be an impact on your budget as a result of that?
Our budget won't be impacted by that, but our office is certainly, and I'm very interested in the additional levels of care which were kind of promised to us through the Burger Commission in terms of a Medicaid-funded assisted living program in lieu of decommissioning some of the nursing home beds in the county. And I have had a preliminary discussion with the new administrator at Cayuga Ridge, and I can intend to follow up with him on that, and as well as another developer who's still interested in making that happen here.
Thank you.
Will.
Thank you, Jim. Quick question, Lisa. What I heard you say on the question cuts was that these would continue. Though I had read elsewhere that actually the levels were going to be increasing. Is that wrong, or
the level of cut, or the level of
the impact of the sequestration that it was not just that you cut X amount and it carried over from year, but actually X was going to be increasing nationally.
Well, what I've been trying to get some clarification on that as well, and what I've heard is that it's based somewhat on formulas that may change from year to year. They may slightly, the cut may slightly increase or decrease, but the funding will not be restored back to
right.
its normal level without positive action. I'm still waiting to hear a little bit more on that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Martha.
Thank you. I'm looking at page 75 in section 4. It's the big picture of the budget. And 2011, your total expenditures were a little over $2 million. They went up for 2012, back down again 2013, and down again 2014. So that 2014, we're spending almost exactly what we spent in 2011. And I don't know how much farther, went back farther.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm presuming the number of senior citizens in Tompkins County hasn't decreased.
That would be a safe presumption, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to suggest that you take a page from Morella Morrow's book and maybe go back farther, to track dollars per senior citizen. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see what... So on this clinical kind of numbers page, it looks sort of, all right, well, you're kind of like holding your own from last year and blah, blah, blah. But this doesn't tell the real story. So if that's something that you could do, I would love to see that information, say, on a graph, number of senior citizens and dollars over, say, the last five or whatever years. And then, dollars per individual. Thank you.
Sure.
Mike.
Don't know if this is necessarily for Lisa or whether it's Joe and Kevin. Rollover I'm interested in. It looks to me, if I'm looking at Section 2, page 24, use of rollover, that your department doesn't have any rollover?
That's correct.
Okay. So am I looking at only the departments listed here have rollover? Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. Thank you.
I have Carol and then Pat.
Hi, Lisa. I was going to go kind of where Martha was going, but I noticed some specific spots in here where it's staying steady from last year, but when you go back a few years, it fell off. And before they got out of our book, I was just wondering if you now had anything specific. The ones that I noticed were Title V and ADRC. I mean, whether those are things that you missed or whether there are others that, you know, over the last 5 years you've had to drop or really reduce that stand out in your mind that we miss.
So the two that you mentioned, the ADRC was a three-year grant that we received. We're one of two counties that received federal funds passed down through the state. So that funding it will not be renewed. The Title V program also, after I submitted this budget, within the last month, we received word that those funds were, the Title V is the senior employment program, and it pays for subsidized position for individuals to work at minimum wage in a subsidized employment to receive skills and training to hopefully get unsubsidized employment. Our funded number of positions that we're able to host at the Office for the Aging has dropped from 3 to 2, and that's based on funding formula, I've been told, and with that, a drop in funding for 2014. I think your question was, are there priority areas that I would look to funding? And I look to the areas of critical need and programs that serve a frail and vulnerable population. Many of our programs do, but always the nutrition program and the ICEP program, which serves frail individuals in their homes. Those are two programs that, however, you know, this body has provided increases in those funding streams over the years, and I felt that this year I was holding it steady.
Pat.
Yeah, my question has been answered. Thank you.
Julie.
Lisa, before the replacement pages were handed out today, had you been contemplating earlier in the budget process requesting additional OTR?
Well, I always do contemplate that and weigh it against the target goals of the legislature and what I know about the current status of the programs. So I guess the answer is yes. I'm always contemplating that, but I did not put it forward this year.
So I guess I would be interested in what you would request were you to have that opportunity, because I view my role as one that is willing to consider those things in the larger context of the whole county budget also.
May I make a suggestion that if you do not have that on hand this moment, you might contact give us all the opportunity to get that. Joe?
Well, yeah, okay. I appreciate the question, and it's fine, but I also think if we're going to be asking that of any department, we have to ask it of all departments.
I'm prepared to do that.
And what they were contemplating back in the springtime, I mean, I just think if that's what we're going to ask, then it has to be equitably asked of all the departments.
Well, yeah. I guess I'm going to make a determination. If that's the way we're going to go through this process, we're not going to go through the process that way. Mike?
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that was the administrator's job.
It is.
To sort those kinds of things out and then recommend something to us.
And he did that.
And?
Brian?
Or a specific amendment.
Right.
That comes from someone.
Exactly.
That's fine.
Dooley, you have your hand up?
Yes, Jim. How am I supposed to solicit the information I'm looking for if not this way?
Well, phone calls, emails. Joe?
I just want to make it clear that departments submit OTRs to me. They have to make those decisions, and Lisa talked about how that process goes. We then evaluate what was presented to us, and that's what's in this budget. Some we've recommended funding, others we don't. But again, I'm not quite sure how we can open up that question to all the departments in terms of what was on your mind back in April or May or June. What might you have asked for? It's so very open-ended, I don't know how we can do that.
I would also just offer, if I could, that, you know, I guess my experience and my judgment, based on last year, there were two areas in which we received significant reductions in state and federal funding, and the local legislature came forward and put funding, you know, made a policy decision to come forward with the local funding to sustain the food net program and our weatherization, the small home repair program. So, you know, I made an assessment this year that we were going to continue on with those funds in those programs, and you know, perhaps I could have come forward with a request to replace the funds that were incurred due to the federal sequestration, but I chose not to. I just wanted to make you aware of them.
Anyone else? Thank you very much. Yes.
It's also Lisa. It's a question for Joe and or Kevin. The summary of OTR, is there some place where there's an explanation of? They all don't have an explanation of what they're for. Is there some place where I can find that?
Nope. Third page of section 2 starts all of the list of OTRs.
Yes, I see the list of OTRs, but just like some of them say what it is for, others of them don't really say anything. That's what I'm
then,
asking.
Then they're within the department. There's a greater explanation within the department.
Thank you.
Emergency response. Blake?
Where is that?
Yes.
So everybody is looking at the same. Just to follow up on Leslin's question, at the end of every departmental section is the list of OTRs that would include the full narrative. So for COFA, if you were looking at COFA and you wanted to look at that, it's on page section 4, page 101. So it's actually not the last page of each department section, but it's toward the end of each departmental section.
Okay. I'm like, I'm not seeing that. Thank you.
Emergency response, section 4, 125. You're on.
Good evening. I wish one of these years when I come in I'd be able to give you something new and exciting other than the same mantra of maintenance of effort, but that's essentially where we'll be tonight. You will see, though, where there's a reflection of some changes in priorities that are occurring within the department. Finally, maybe moving us past the technological advances and more toward the staff development side. First slide just reflects the modified and recommended budget and the change of $133,000. That does include some one-time money that I'll go back to in just a moment. Our full-time equivalency staffing has remained fairly level throughout the years. In fact, the 27.5 that we're at now, I think, is down 1.5 from where it was 7 or 8 years ago. We have asked for the creation of one new full-time position, one full-time equivalency, as well as a continuation for a half year of one position as we transfer with what we hope to be soon the hiring of a new communications center manager. So 0.5 would go away next year, the following budget year. OTRs that are reflected in this budget include one to increase the communications center manager salary requisite with the re-rating of the position that occurred. And I think you're all aware that as we began the search for a communications center manager, we went back and revised the job description, and through that process, it was re-rated by the personnel office. It needs to increase one grade. We've been advertising at that level. And so I'm asking that that the personnel costs reflect that increase in the rating. Second over-target request is a one-time request to continue our assistant director for emergency communications for a period of up to 6 months as we transition with the hiring of a new manager. We've got a lot of initiatives that are underway, and it's likely, probable, that when we make the hiring that the person will be from outside of the organization, and there will be a significant transition for them to take on. And I don't want to see us drop the initiatives as we have unfortunately had to do in the past or delay them. We want to be able to keep forward on moving on some of these things as we bring someone in and acclimate them to the organization. Third over-target request goes to the heart of the study that was done on our operations over the last year to year and a half, and a recommendation that we begin to focus on the training and development of our dispatch staff in particular. And what I am proposing to do is to create a position that would be a full-time training and quality assurance person that will do day-to-day auditing of the operations. Also will be directly responsible for the training of our staff and ongoing training. And each of our staff members, when they're brought on board, do go through significant training. We have continuing training education programs, but we're beginning to see an overturn within our staff as well. This year, I think, for the first time in many years, we've had a change of four staff members. And looking ahead over the next year, 2 years, 3 years, close to a third of our staff are approaching retirement age and are openly talking about moving toward that next plateau. Unfortunately, for us, that means that there will have to be heavy emphasis on training of new staff. We're going to lose some significant institutional knowledge there. But all things together, we really do need to be able to provide the communications manager with the support of staff that is monitoring the day-to-day activities and developing training as well. The fourth item is, which has not been recommended, is one that I bring to you every year as kind of a plea or something to keep off in the horizon, keep an eye on, and that's the fact that we have many millions of dollars of equipment that we've invested in our technology, and we have very limited equipment lines. Systems are running very well and are well maintained, and we've got some very expensive service contracts that keep that equipment maintained. But when you have air conditioners and battery systems and base stations that run 24 hours a day, 365, and they're now in their fifth or sixth year, we really need to be thinking about how we can begin to build a reserve fund or at least anticipate future replacement costs. And this is $25,000, in the scope of things, is a drop in the bucket compared to the investment that you have. But I'm dealing right now with a wholesale a battery replacement cost in our uninterrupted power supplies, where I've had to reduce service contracts in order to make a 20-some thousand dollar purchase. And this is the juggling act that goes on year after year. With Arell's help and Greg's help and a few others, we're able to manage it, but we're not setting anything aside. So those are the priorities that I have to put forward this evening, and be glad to take any questions.
Carol?
Hi, Lee. Where does it show in here? How are you handling things between the county and the city? Are they still, do they directly pay for the people who are allocated to the city?
We've got a revenue line, I believe, in 3410 that reflects an adjustment in the sales tax of $180,000. That's a continuing item.
So where it says local revenues on page 127, section 4, page 127, that's the city.
Correct.
That's correct.
That. And does that show up in our in the staff numbers, the FTEs?
No. It's, you know, it would be equivalent to maybe three of the full-time positions when you figure the benefits cost in. That number was based on an increase in costs that were commensurate with us picking up five full-time equivalencies 10 years ago. So that's been a number that was negotiated and has remained the same, and it hasn't caused any fluctuation in the number of positions. In fact, it's there to guarantee that we maintain a particular number 24 hours a day.
And no other municipalities make that, like the 180 is all from the city, not from any other municipalities?
Correct.
Okay, and then the training, you mentioned, and boy, I saw somewhere in here, page 132, there's an emergency response coordination that includes the federal training programs. So is that where you're building in the new training?
No. That references I do, and a significant amount of my time I do, and some of our assistant directors do, as far as coordinating training of the emergency response agencies, the fire departments, emergency medical services, emergency management disciplines. And that's a cost related to implementing those programs and the funding that comes from the state to support that. The training initiatives that I'm referencing in the over-target requests are directly related to the training of our full-time dispatching staff.
And so at any given time, we have like about six or eight people in the room, and so this will be a training position full-time to train that, but round the clock.
21 full-time equivalent dispatchers.
Thank you.
Martha, Mike, Frank, Ludlow.
Thank you. So back to page 127, the city's contract. So that was, I do remember it was negotiated as the equivalent of five FTEs at the time. With the passage of time and the increase in salaries and fringes, that now just covers about three.
Probably a little less than three when we factor in overtime and the size of the fringe benefits.
Okay. And is there, how long is that, remind me, how long is that contract in place? Is there any point at which it gets renewed or rediscussed, or is that like forever?
It's open-ended. It was a continuing amount after a period of 3 or 4 years when there was an escalating number and then it dropped.
So, and it's one, as in all 24/7 operations, one position is five FTEs, right? So this maintains our commitment to, or we're maintaining our commitment to the one sort of city first dispatch phone line.
Correct.
With a decreasing allocation. All right. Thank you.
Excuse me, whoever's next. Joe, did you want to get in here?
Only to make a clarification.
Go ahead.
Carol suggested this is a training position. That will be a part of the responsibilities of this position. There's an important quality assurance role that will be a part of the position as well. There'll be a review of tapes. There'll be a critique of the dispatch practices and those kinds of things. There may be some Spillman administration in here. So there's a number of things bundled in this position, all of which are very important to the operation. So I wouldn't want to characterize this only as a training position because it's broader than that.
Mike. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, I understand the $25,000 over target, the purpose that you're asking for. How is that going to be set up? Do you anticipate spending that in the over target? Are we going to put it into a reserve account, or what's going to happen?
I would hope eventually we would get to a reserve account. I don't know that we've ever had a formal structure that we've considered, but it's a step toward having the money there. One of the things, for instance, last year we did create on the office side a $12,000 line item for computer equipment, basically from the standpoint that every year there's so many servers or computers or whatever that need to be replaced. And so that's how we're managing it to keep the office up and running. And the same idea is there as far as the communication system is at least to have a pool to draw from.
But if it's not in some kind of reserve, doesn't it go away at the end of the year if you haven't spent it?
Yes.
It may come back as rollover or may get reappropriated in a budget process, I would assume.
I would think we ought to think about a reserve account.
Mike, are you talking about the $25,000 OTR that was not added?
Okay. Thank you.
Frank.
Thanks, Jim. Lee, recently I'd become really aware of the impact on a lot of our rural departments, not just fire, but ambulance service, and the lack of volunteers. And it's continuing. It's not a recent revelation. But one of the items that's come up is the EMTs, or lack of EMTs, because of the cost of training and the length of time that they have to stick with it in order to take that exam, and then hopefully the state cut out the reimbursement, as I understand it, or maybe they put a tag on the reimbursement if there ever will be one again. I got to ask this in two different ways. Is there a role for your department to play in EMT training for the rural ambulance services? And if so, I know TC3 has a program, but they want all of their money up front. And some of the people that don't complete the training or don't take the certificate class and pass that, TC3 has lost money, and that's why they want it up front. So is there a role that your department can play? And if we wanted to put some money in for training to help these rural departments out, so that they don't have to foot the bill and then end up, I mean, some of them are on a wing and a prayer. And $1,000, it costs about $1,000 to train an EMT. And it's a time commitment. And a lot of these people don't have $1,000, not only individually, but the departments. Is there, if you were going to stick that money in a line, where would you put it? And if there was is there a role for your department to play in helping with this training?
There might be a role in working on recruitment and retention programs promoting volunteerism, and there may be an opportunity where we could look to help provide some tuition money. The state historically has provided reimbursement funding, but it's a difficult situation. We had an advanced emergency medical technician class that was scheduled to start a few weeks ago at TC3 that was canceled due to a lack of enrollment, and I don't believe it was really a matter of the students not being able to find the funds to participate. It's just finding the people that that have the time to volunteer that can put in that much of a commitment. And it's less and less. And I can tell you from my own squad, there's about a half a dozen of us left, in addition to some hired personnel that, you know, we're running twice the volume that we were 20 years ago, and it's killing us. And there are no easy answers, but there's a role for our department and continues to be in coordinating with those services and attempting to identify educational opportunities.
So where would it be, recruitment and retention?
That would be where we'd want to place some focus, maybe.
And you need $100,000?
Have you got that?
Oh. Leslie, go ahead.
Joe, I appreciate your explanation about OTR number 19. And I'm just wondering, the work that's being described here, isn't it something that could be done by either of the two other positions that are currently on the books, the center manager and the assistant director of emergency response?
The assistant director of emergency response will go away. That's the working title for the communication center manager out, and that'll be transitioning
away.
So
that will be gone.
Right.
That answers my second question.
And that does give me an opportunity, though, just to keep talking. I think this is a very high priority, OTR. It's very much on the list of our customers in terms of what we can do to improve our service to them. This is an idea that's come from ECROC and from the folks that participate in it. I think to a person, they would agree that this is an area, training and quality assurance, that's extremely important to a high-functioning 911 center. And with respect to the $180,000, I think it's something that shows that we are continuing to add to the value of the service that we provide in return for that $180,000. Lee used a word in describing that half-year position, that assistant director, that's really important, and then we ought to kind of get on the record and begin talking about it, and that's accreditation of the 911 center that we think is the next logical step in what we do at that center. So in terms of that half-time position, it not only will assist with transition, but will also help us get started on the accreditation process.
Brian.
Can I ask a follow-up, please?
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
So if I'm reading OTR 18 right, we're talking about 6 months. We're hoping within that time to have hired a center manager. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then that position will no longer exist.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Brian.
I'm glad you said that with a caveat, we're hoping. There's a lot of moving parts going on here all at once, and the main thing is that we can't settle, you know, can't hire somebody just to hire them. This new position is probably the most critical part of this whole presentation, this part of your budget. Because as Joe puts it, the clients are the ones that are basically begging for this. You know, the manager position is important, and we are looking, and, you know, maybe we found one, maybe we haven't. But this OTR, especially for QA, is very, very important.
Anyone else? Thank you, Lee.
Thank you.
Yes, Peter.
Well, I came in the middle of this. I'm sorry.
I realize that.
From my own experience, I think that something we really need a position like this, that we do not have the capability of solving all the problems that come up. There are somehow more problems coming up than we can solve with the amount of people that we have to solve them. And it seems to me this is an important addition.
Thank you. I had, Peter, before you came in, I had everyone will get an opportunity to say positive things about this position as we go through the process. Thank you, Lee, very much. County historian is next. too.
I have nothing to ask you for, but I would like, isn't that different? But I would like to thank you for your support of history in the county. I've been active as county historian and the Civil War Commission, which comes under the county historian's line, has been active. I don't have a duty to them. Okay. And I would like to remind you or tell you for the first time that there will be the second presentation of The Language of War, which is being read by members of the Civil War Commission at Enfield on the 5th of October at 11 o'clock in the morning. And this is a drama drawn from the letters and diaries and newspaper accounts from Tompkins County residents during the Civil War. And I think you might enjoy it.
Any questions for Carol? It's, we're looking at a $7,500 request. Is that it? 55 and 2? Okay. Any questions? Mike Lane.
Carol, we're three years away from the bicentennial of our county.
That's right.
And I wonder if you have that on the radar screen.
It's on the radar screen. Let's fight the Civil War and then finish that. But it certainly is. And I don't have any plans at this moment, but Marsha Lynch and I have been talking about what we might do, and we will certainly come to you with some proposal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Carol.
Thank you.
Arel, facilities. For those of you who are keeping score, it is Section 4, page 135. There is a PowerPoint sheet.
Good evening. I handed out an additional sheet that was not in the packet that you received earlier, and it's the chart that I submit every budget that shows looks back at maintenance and cleaning analysis. But I'll start with the budget. The budget for this year, no new initiatives, basically continuing with maintenance of effort. There's the 2013 budget compared to 2014. The additional in revenue is funding that we received from solid waste that has not always been reflected in my budget, but does come in as revenue that formerly David Squires would apply to our budget. So it covers maintenance and cleaning of the solid waste facilities. No change in full-time equivalents from the current year, 31.6. We have two part-time staff, an administrative assistant and our electrician are both part-time. And this is the chart that I've shown for many years that compares current year in maintenance against going back to 2000. As you see on the upper left in circle, 338,345 square feet. Currently on the upper right is 430,000 square feet that we maintain, almost 100,000 additional square feet. And then I usually compare it to the yellow bar graph on the bottom. Back in 2000, each maintenance worker basically maintained an average of 293,000 square feet, compared to, for 2014, will be about 60,614. So we've been adding new buildings, making additions, but not increasing our staff over that period of time. And a similar one for our cleaning operations. Also, about 100,000 square feet additional square footage that we clean, and our cleaners currently, and on average, clean about 20,269 square feet, compared to in 2000 it was 14,263. As you recall, last year there was an over-target request, or actually not requested by me, but by a legislator to add a half-time cleaning position since we were bringing on the Human Services Annex building, and I appreciated that, and that position has helped us to maintain the Human Services Annex. There are two over-target requests in my budget. The first one is the new city sidewalk assessment that will most likely take effect the beginning of next year, which will add an additional cost to our budget of $9,100. In the past, the county was responsible for repairing sidewalks along our properties. I think this is a good assessment for us. I think over time, it will, at least for the next 5 years, we had been looking at significant sidewalk improvements. And so if we're only going to be paying $9,100 over the next several years, I think that will be below what we had estimated for sidewalk repairs over the next 5 years.
Don't tell anybody.
That's the first one. The second over-target request is as a result of the workplace violence prevention assessments that the county has been doing over the last several years, about 3 years. And so in current year 2013, there's $50,000 in our budget to address improvements in various county buildings as a result of these assessments. And so Joe is included an additional $50,000 for 2014 to continue that effort of making improvements, either building modifications or additional equipment to address workplace violence and safety.
Questions? Let me just make one comment. Mike, I have you down. Arel, you have... tonight's gold star for the really coolest looking presentation, the colors, especially that. If you were teaching with me, I would love to be able to find out how you do that.
I always do this because I know I'm the last one. You guys are probably tired. It's been a long day, so I thought I'd inject some color.
I'm suggesting music for people next year, you know, background music along with their
presentation. That I can do. My daughter can help me with that.
Cool. Mike, you're on, then Martha, Will, and Carol.
The sidewalk assessment over target, I understand that. But doesn't it put us on the city schedule for the rebuilding of the sidewalks? For example, if we have a bad spot that needs to be done, It may or may not be when they're planning to do the sidewalk rehabilitation. So I wonder, even if it's a lower amount, whether we're going to get the service when we would have normally thought we needed it. And also, I wonder about, is it just sidewalks, or does it include the driveway aprons? And I'm thinking about the ones here at the courthouse, for example, that are in bad shape.
My understanding, at least for the latter question, it does not include aprons. That still would fall on the property owner. It would just be the sidewalks. Yeah, I mean, that's something that it's not clear in the sidewalk assessment as far as, you know, the priorities and who will prioritize that. I think we will be strong advocates to the city to say that, you know, these, since they've cited us on in certain properties, things that need to be remedied, that we would talk to them about putting those on as higher priority on their schedule for sidewalk improvements. We have issues at the Human Services Building here around the court complex, I think, are probably the two properties that we would feel that we'd like addressed quickly by the city.
Martha.
Thank you very much. Arel, the city side, the second OTR, the violence prevention, can you give us a couple examples of modifications that are included?
I can speak for current year. The assessments were done. They may already be complete for this year. I haven't seen the report yet, and I know that personnel representatives from the union and our assistant director have walked through all county buildings to do the annual assessments of the buildings. So I'm not sure what would be proposed for next year, but as far as samples of projects for this year, the assessment department, they are proposing making modifications to the counter at their front office. And I'm actually going to be meeting with Jay this Thursday to discuss that. Office of Mental Health also is looking at doing modifications to the reception and considering possibly doing a centralized reception rather than having decentralized reception on each floor, bringing all their reception offices down to the ground level and having something similar to what you may see at the health department. So we have had two initial discussions, and we're going to be meeting with them shortly to do more space and program design to see how we may accommodate a centralized reception on that ground floor. Other things, the Human Services Building has looked at putting in an access control for the Probations Department so that they can control access to their department. They've talked about laminated type glass, similar to bulletproof glass, which we will investigate as part of the addition for day reporting program. Those are district attorney's office. We should have already completed. We're locking out the elevator, so after 4:30, the elevator will not go up to the third floor since security is no longer in the building after 4:30. And we're also considering putting in like a video intercom similar to what you have in this building so that if somebody does come after hours, they will know who's there and they can either admit the person into their office or floor.
Okay, and thank you. And the solid waste amount that you said was explain what you mean by that it was brought into your budget.
Well, the enterprise funds that we provide services to, and in this case, it's only solid waste. Years ago, we would provide maintenance services to the airport, but these enterprise funds would basically reimburse or pay our department for maintenance and cleaning. And so they've been doing that for many years, and it hasn't been reflected in our budget. They've been putting it as a revenue that is captured in our account. So I think we picked it up with Kevin early this year and made sure that we included it as a revenue source on the budget that we submit.
So it's not a new revenue source?
No.
It's just an artifact that's going to look like that? And
yes.
But it's really not new? Okay, thanks.
Carol Chuck.
So the city program, if we're doing a major renovation or build our own project, do they come in and rebuild the sidewalks afterwards? Or if it's our project, we still do our sidewalk, like the Human Services building, if we tear up the sidewalk?
Well, from what I understand, this law, if you're doing new construction, then it's the owner's responsibility to make any improvements to the sidewalk. So that's a good question. At the Human Services Annex, we did have to modify along the Albany Street side, so we did have to do some improvements to the sidewalk. So I would assume if we're doing new construction or significant renovation that affects or impacts the sidewalks, that we would pay for that.
And then I noticed 141% increase in revenues, and I couldn't figure out where. How did we get that big an increase in revenues?
Yeah, that's what I explained before. The $28,005 that you see in 2013, that's the airport division's contribution to the energy performance contract or the improvements that we did back in 2005-2006 countywide. So that's your contribution to those improvements. And then in 2014, the additional, the difference between the 28, so that $40,398 is essentially the solid waste, what I explained before, payment of maintenance and cleaning their facility.
Leslie.
Thank you. Errol, I see the violence prevention one. I just wondered, based on a conversation we had at WDIC, if there's has been any movement around sort of the disability assessments as well and some of the changes that might have to happen with that.
Yes, if we did do assessments in buildings and saw the need to make some changes or improvements, those would not come out of that $50,000. They would either come out of our operating budget under building repairs, or if it's significant, we would have to approach county administration as a contingency fund. But it's good that you bring that up. We did an assessment about 2 weeks ago for Board of Elections. They had asked for us to consider a ramp, and so we looked at that. Looked at that with Holt Architects, versus putting a ramp versus other accessibility improvements that we could make at a lower cost, and we proposed both to Board of Elections, and they opted for us putting in door operators on the existing Buffalo Street entrance. So we'd put a door operator on the exterior door, widen the doorway as you goes to the rear part of their department, and then put another door operator on that rear door. And they have got a Dutch door by their counter that we would also make modifications to. And that was something that Board of Election felt was a better improvement to address ADA than putting in a ramp at the front.
If I may ask a follow-up.
Oh, sure.
And it just occurred to me that there are modifications that are going to be happening to the Human Services building. And that was one of the facilities we talked about. So I don't know if that was included when we talked about accessibility issues with that building, the doors especially.
I think when we had that meeting, I indicated that when we look at the design for the addition of the Human Services building, and if there's the potential for adding some additional improvements, you know, if the initial budget comes in lower than what has been shared at this point, that we would look at possible modifications to that main entrance to the building.
Okay.
To make it more accessible. And currently it meets the requirements, but I think we'd like to look at making improvements to that to make it more accessible to the public.
Kirsten.
I don't have a question anymore. Thank
Dooley.
You can put me back on the list.
Yeah. Okay.
It'll come back to me. I waited too long. Just a minute.
Don't wait too long. Carol Chalk.
I remember it.
Go ahead.
All right, go ahead.
Do you know which zone, which neighborhood we're part of for city sidewalk purposes?
I do not.
Because it's the neighborhood that decides how the funds are spent. So it's important for us to know that. If you could find that out, that would be good.
Okay, I will.
I want to go to that meeting. Carol.
we should all go. Where was I? That was funny. Utilities. I see that there's something of a reduction in our utility costs, which is great. If this is a longer discussion, we could do it at F&I, but do you have a quick analysis of, is that
does that come from our solar panels, from our Johnson Control stuff? From, is there a reason for that, even though we've got more buildings?
Well, rates have been pretty stable. They've not increased over the last 2 to 3 years. And so based on our actual consumption, I felt that we can reduce our budget for both electric and natural gas. Yes, the improvements that we made several years ago contribute significantly to that. Solar is not a, I mean, the Solar Liberty installations are not a significant reduction because really the net savings are about $10,000. But it's more looking at what our expenditures have been over the last 3 years. The rates are pretty stable. We don't see that they're going to be increasing either in electric or natural gas. And also I think we've been better over the last few years in trying to squeeze out every savings we can from our building operations by limiting the runtime of our HVAC systems, lights and things of that nature. So I think in talking with Kevin, we saw that some of the electric and budget accounts were higher than they needed to be, so we reduced those. And I feel pretty comfortable that the numbers that we have budgeted will cover our utilities expenses for next year.
Leslie.
Two quick follow-up questions. I just want clarification. So the modifications to the Board of Elections that's included in your operating budget, is
yes.
reflected in 2014, or can you do it out of 2015?
This year, yes.
Fabulous. And secondly, it might have been a while now, but I don't remember, why is it that we no longer provide services to the airport? Contract services.
Well, I think it was a mutual agreement. We felt we didn't have enough staff to really dedicate much time, and their funding allows them, they have more money. They spend more money per square foot than we do. It'd be nice if we could spend as much as they do per square foot for maintenance. So they outsource a lot of those maintenance.
Okay. Thank you.
Dooley?
Yes. It's gone again. I'm sorry.
Phone it in. If there are no other questions, we are done here. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Joe, are there any comments from you or Kevin?
No.
Thank you all for coming. And let me just say one thing.
Before you close?
Yeah. But let me just say one thing. Food money to Kathy Covert. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I think you'd be interested to see what we're doing now online, even almost in real time in terms
right.
of being able to get the slide presentations you saw tonight online. Also, if you've asked for follow-up information, I think that's now online. So you'll be able to access this information almost in real time that we're doing now, as will people who are following this process.
And let me make one other comment. Kevin, and you can agree with me or not, this format that we have been using with the computers and the PowerPoints over the last 2 years, it seems like this year department heads have really signed on to this and enjoy doing it as best they can. It's not been a struggle to get people to put these PowerPoint presentations together, and the format seems to work well for each department. So I appreciate Arel and all the department heads who work so hard to do this, and especially you, Kevin.
Thanks,
Pat and Dooley.
I just wanted to say say thank you for all the work that's gone into the preliminary, the paperwork and so on that we've gotten here. It does seem like we have improved each year that we've done
yeah.
this, and I find it much more understandable.
Thank you. Dooley?
Yes, it's a question for Arel. Everything I read about air conditioning temperature settings, including our local utility, which is not the most progressive necessarily in that area, says you should not set air conditioning below 78 degrees. Are we able to meet that? What would it take to meet that?
Well, the the major problem that we would have is at 78, we wouldn't be able to remove a lot of the humidity in the building, and we don't have dehumidifiers, and putting dehumidification causes other problems. So in order to remove the humidity in the buildings, we tend to run them around 73 to 74. In certain areas where we've had problems and inability to maintain it at that range, we get a lot of complaints. At 78, it would be people are complaining it's too warm because it feels humid in the space.
So how else can one remove humidity?
Well, by running the air conditioner at that, you know, 73, 74.
There are no other ways.
Big sponges.
I'm really concerned that we are continuing on this trajectory, which has us using energy in a way I think is inappropriate.
And I think we'll end with that comment. Thank you all for coming, and we will see you tomorrow at 5:30.